Yalla, guys. So, if you remember, we are at the top of Heyman Bet, where the Gemara wanted to derive three things from Rabbi Akiva, right? Rabbi Akiva thought that you are not allowed to do Bir Hametz on Yom Tov itself. And the Gemara derived three things from this. One is that Havara is a malacha and not a lav. The second is that you have to destroy chametz by burning it and not in other ways. And the third thing is that we don't say ho avohotra havara l'tzarach hotra na mishlo l'tzarach, which gets us into the wonderful sugya of ochal nefesh. That we don't say that since you're allowed to burn for food purposes, you're allowed to burn for non-food purposes, which again brings us to ochal nefesh. So just a reminder, bring us up to speed where we were last time. So how do we know that you're allowed to do malacha on Yom Tov for food purposes? Thank you, the Pasuk says, though. Good, you didn't forget since Thursday, and in fact, you knew it on Thursday. Amazing. That the Pasuk in Shmuel Yud Bet says, V'yom Rishon Mikra Kodesh, V'yom Rishon Mikra Kodesh, Yelochem, Kol Melacha Le'aseh Bahem, Ach Asher Yachol L'chol Nefesh, U'levado Yaseh Lochem. You cannot do Melacha on Yom Tov, except that which is Ach Asher Yachol L'chol Nefesh, anything which is eaten. So if you're going to do a malacha for the purpose of eating, you're going to cook, you're going to knead, you're going to whatever, okay? So that is permitted, okay? So if you want to make fresh bread, so you can take the flour, you can knead it into dough, which would violate lush, you can bake it, which would be ofet, which would be mavasha, right? You can do all of that on Yom Tov. Yes? Good. Very good. And the Mishnah, as we saw in number two, tells us that this is the defining characteristic that divides Shabbat and Yom Tov. Ein min Shabbat, ein min Yom Tov l'Shabbat el ochal nefesh bilvad. There is no difference except for the other differences, but the only difference, which is not the only difference, is that on Shabbat you cannot perform malacha for the creation of food. Yom Tov you can. It was one of those things I remember growing up that there were like the random people who'd be like, of course it's mutter to do that, it's for food. It's reading, it's for Onik Shabbos. And I'm like, do you know anything about Hilchos Shabbos? Literally, the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is that we forbid many things that have to do with food. That is the difference. I mean, the fact that it's for food might have certain kulot, but you can't just wave your magic wand on Shabbos and say it's for food. That would allow cooking and kneading and, you know, a whole bunch of malachot that are about food. And you can't do that.
I'm just picturing a guy trying to justify
rationing and stuff. So we have this little kid's book. I don't even know who it's by. It's like, I think it's like an Eric Carle book or something. You know Eric Carle, right? Like he made like The Very Hungry Butterfly. You know those books. So I think it's one of those. So he has one. What? Caterpillar, that's what I mean. So he has one. So I think it's him. That it's... what's it called? Like, I want like pancakes for breakfast or something. And it's a story about a boy who comes to his mother and says, I want a pancake. And she says, sure, but I'm very busy. So you need to help me make a pancake. And I don't know exactly when this historically is supposed to be taking place. But he's like, first, you have to go to the miller. And he goes to the miller. And first, they cut down the wheat and they thresh it. Now you have to take it and turn it into flour. So then they winnow and then they crush it down. They turn it into flour. Now you must make the milk. You must go to the milk farm. And now you need to make it into butter. It's just like it goes through like 10 malachot. So my kids just read it because they have like the 39 malachot book and then this pancake making book. And it just goes through like every malacha that you can think of. It's unbelievable. It's really hysterical. But yes, on Shabbat, you can't do any of those. It doesn't help you that it's food. That's the whole point. Okay, so as I said, I don't want to spend forever on Ochal Nefesh, but I do want you to understand the general theory. So I gave you a brief article, an English article that I sent you by Ray Tarragon. Yes? You read it? Yes? Okay, good. So he presents there two, though I'll subdivide it really into three, visions of Ochal Nefesh. Okay? And we're oversimplifying it a lot. But if I ask you, why is it that on Shabbat it is forbidden to do malachot like cooking, and on Yom Tov it is permitted to do malachot like cooking? So why? What would you say? What is it? How can you conceptualize the fact that it is permitted to do malacha for food on Yom Tov? Please clarify.
Because
On Shabbos, there's that you only have a mitzvah to keep Shabbos, and there are lots of restrictions and rules around that. But for Yom Tov, there's this extra thing for Yom Tov
that, which does what?
Which would apparently allow the Rabbanan to institute.
It's not the Rabbanan.
The Torah. The Rabbanan layout exactly.
What is the nature of it? You're just telling me why it's mutter. Tell me how it's mutter. What is the nature of the heter?
Eating food makes you happy.
And therefore what? That doesn't explain. What's the nature of the heter? Why is it I'm allowed to do this malacha? What? Very good. Right? So one conceptualization is what we call in halacha, dechuya. What does dechuya mean? Dechuya means suspended, really. Right? In this context. It means, as Eitan put it, fundamentally, all malachot should be asur on Yom Tov. But, for whatever reason, possibly for the reason that Mordechai said, but that's the why, so let's hold that for 1 second. But for whatever reason, on Yom Tov, we say that certain malachot are suspended. If, and only if, they are necessary for food production. Which means that if I ask you, how many malachot are there on Yom Tov, Eitan? 39. There are 39 malachot. However, certain the malachot, if you can justify them in light of the principle of Ochel Nefesh, so then they become permitted. Now, a secondary question would be, why would you suspend the malachot? So then you might say, like Mordechai saying, well, on Shabbat you're supposed to enjoy yourself, but Oneg is not as strong as Simcha. We talked about Simcha for a week earlier in the year. Simcha is, you know, a super valuable thing, and therefore maybe the mitzvah of simcha allows you to override the existence of certain malachot if they are necessary in order to fill simcha yom tov. Who takes that argument? Shagas Aryeh. Right? Shagas Aryeh makes that argument, and therefore he says, how do I know that this is true? So he says, look, he takes it as a given that the reason that you're allowed to override the malachot is because of simcha yom tov. And therefore he says, is there a mitzvah of simcha on Rosh Hashanah? Why would you say there isn't a mitzvah of simcha on Rosh Hashanah? Because it's not so happy, right? The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. Correct, that it's a Yom Din, right? That why would you say... Exactly, right? The Gemara says, why don't you say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah? And it's like, what? How could you say Hallel? God is judging you for life and death, and you're going to be singing? Mazet. Right? So the Gemara clearly tells you that it's less of a happy day. So the Shagas Aryeh says... So... Is there a mitzvah of simcha at all on Rosh Hashanah? I mean, what's the Gemara telling you? That it's a day of judgment and therefore you should sit in there shaking all day, right, and not be happy? Or is it telling you, no, there's a mitzvah of happy, but it's mixed in, right, or whatever. There's another emphasis of judgment, and therefore that diminishes it. So the Shagas Aryeh says, well, if you assume that Ochel Nefesh is fundamentally dichuya, it's suspended, and what allows you to suspend it is the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov. And I know that in Rosh Hashanah you're allowed to cook, right? The laws of Ochel Nefesh apply in Rosh Hashanah as well. That's a given. So then it must be that Simchat Yom Tov applies. Now, this is not obvious because you don't have to say it's Simchat Yom Tov. You could say it's something else, right? But okay, that's a Shagas Aryeh. But one conceptualization is called dichuya, right? That the prohibitions exist, but they are suspended, okay? Docha means to be pushed aside. Meaning, right, lidchok literally means to push, right? So the way you conceptualize is the iser is here, but if you have enough halachic force, you can just push it to the side. Okay? Now, so the Gemara's classic case is the fact that if the majority of the community is tamei, so you're allowed to bring a karban Bituma. You're allowed to bring karban bituma. The halacha is tuma, either dichuya b'tzibur or hutra b'tzibur, right? So the Gemara says that what's the difference between dichuya and hutra? So without getting to all the details, the difference is, right? Once we say that it's dichuya, do we basically stop caring at all? Do we say, look, we are now in the mode of, Karban, which is Tame, right? We're just in that mode. We're in that way of thinking. So now you don't have to worry about Tumah at all, right? Right? Or do you say, you do have to worry, right? So this is a machloket in the war. And Yom, right, so for example, I'll just like give you an example, right? The Gemara in Yoma presents one nafkamina of this. Is atonement necessary? Right? If you do bring a karban when it is tame, but you're allowed to do it, do you need atonement? Right? Do you need kapara? So the Gemara says that this might hang on this question. That if you say it's dichuya, that basically the prohibition exists, but you're allowed to hold it in abeyance. So you're allowed to do it, but still something is wrong spiritually, and therefore you need atonement. Now, the atonement is provided by the tzitz, right, by the head plate of the Kohen Gadol, but atonement is necessary. Whereas, so that's model one, yes? Model two is what the Gemara there calls hutra. What does hutra mean? It's just allowed, right? It's just allowed. That it's not like the isser is an abeyance. The isser just ceases to exist. Right? It is non-existent. Okay? But that's not, but that's not relevant, right? So, but Avi picks up an important point, and this is, right, Tarragon didn't put this in his article, but I'll tell you how I heard it first from Lohenstein many years ago. So Lohenstein says, look, really there's three models, okay? One is what we call dichuya. Dechuya is that the Isser is held in abeyance. It exists, but for whatever reason, and for simplicity, let's go with Mordechai and the Shakas Aryeh's approach. Simchat Yom Tov. We allow you on Yom Tov to push aside the prohibition. Okay? Yes? Yalla. Then there's a stronger formulation, which is that the Isser is just mutter. We say the Isser what? Right? On Shabbat, it's Usser, and on Yom Tov, it is mutter. Now, Avi comes and tells me, wait a second, if it's mutter, so then, yeah, you shouldn't draw distinctions, and who cares if it's relevant to Ochel Nefesh, not relevant to Ochel Nefesh, right? You should just be mutter. So not necessarily, right? Because Hutra is clearly more expensive than Dechuya, right? The Isser is, when you need to cook for food, it is now mutter, right? But there are two ways of looking at Hutra. One way of saying Hutra is basically the Isser ceases to exist. Right? The other is to say, no, when you trigger the Heter, you no longer have to justify it. But you still need to trigger the Heter. Right? So therefore, Rav Luchanzin said, there is an even stronger model than Hutra. Because Hutra says, look, I need to trigger the Heter, but once I've triggered the Heter, so then I don't have to justify myself. Right, it's really mutter. Right, the Isser doesn't exist once I've triggered the Heter. But he said there is theoretically an even stronger model. Right, so let me give you a very radical example to understand it, and then I'll give you the example on Yom Tov. Okay, if I asked you, Nadav, why is it mutter? What are you doing? How is it mutter for you to be using your laptop today? What are you doing? What would you tell me? What? No. Why would I say? I don't understand. It's a malacha. Whatever malacha it is. Let's assume it's a malacha. What would you say? You would say it's Sunday. You're right, but it's Sunday. Right? So Rav Luchanzin says, right, if I asked you, why is it mutter for you to do malacha today, you wouldn't tell me, well, it's hutra. Right? You would say, go to lo namra. Right? It was never, what are you talking about? It's not like I need a head there. It's like, how are you eating chametz today? It's like, oh, it's not Pesach. Like, what do you want for my life? It's not Pesach. Right? So Rav Luchanzin said, technically, there are three models. There's what we call dechuya, which is the Isser exists, but it's held in abeyance. There's hutra, which is, I need to trigger the heter, but once I trigger the heter, it's completely mutter. And then there's an even more radical model, which is something like lonemra. Which, admittedly, some people think this is hutra, but you can see how they're conceptualized differently, which is to say, no, the same way I can't yell at Nadav and say, how dare you use your computer on Sunday, because it's a malacha. And he'll say, yes, it is a malacha. Sure. Let's assume it's a malacha. I don't know what malacha electricity is, but let's assume it is. Okay, fine. Not. Why are you making a sandwich? Someone make a sandwich. No, don't. Right. Kobe's like, I'll do it. I will be the carbon for the example. I will, if I must, I must. So Kobe goes to make a sandwich. Say, Kobe, what are you doing? How are you making a sandwich? It's a malacha. You'll say, yes, but it's Sunday, Rabbi. And I'll say, ah, good point. Taka, good point. It is Sunday. So Rulachamzi notes that another way of conceptualizing melach, the Isra Melach of Ochel Nefesh on Yom Tov is not even Hutra, but is stronger, is Lonemra. Right? Now, who seems to take the either very strong Hutra or maybe even stronger Lonemra? I sent you this article, but I didn't give it to you inside, but the Ramban. Right? Because the Ramban has a very important thesis. The Ramban says like this. Every time Melacha is brought up in the context of Shabbat, it is called Melacha. Melacha is asur on Shabbat. Right? Yes? Good. In the context of Yom Tov, the Pasuk uses a different phrase. Not Melacha, but Melechet Avodah. Very good. Melechet Avodah. And the Ramban says, very good. So the Ramban just says, it's very simple. On Shabbat, Melacha is asur. And on Yom Tov, Melechet Avodah is mutter. And Melechet, what malachot are not Melechet Avodah? They're only Melacha, but not Melechet Avodah? Food preparation, exactly. He says, Melechet Avodah are things that happen in the field, essentially. I'm oversimplifying, but fine. Right? And Melacha includes things that are food preparation. But food preparation is just not Melechet Avodah. Which means that if you take the Ramban seriously, how many malachot are there on Yom Tov? 33? I don't know, something like that. Right, I mean, you have to, exactly, depending on exactly where you draw the line,
right
Mivashal and Lash, and there's certain whatever, fine. Okay. So here's the interesting thing, right, is that you would say that which of these three models is the most expansive? Like, which one is going to generate the most leniencies, the most lenient perception? So you would think the Ramban, right? That's sort of true, right? That's sort of true. Why is that sort of true? Because according to the Ramban, it's very easy to explain why Bishul is mutter, right? However, according to the Ramban, it would be very hard to explain why a malacha that isn't normally food-oriented would be mutter on Yom Tov if it were necessary for food. The Ramban just says that the reason Ramban, right? The Ramban says the reason that Ochel Nefesh is mutter is because on Shabbat, Milocha is Asur, and on Yom Tov, Melechet Avodah is Asur. Right? Shabbat, Milocha is Asur, and Yom Tov, Melechet Avodah is Asur. Right? And he says the difference between Milocha and Melechet Avodah is Melechet Avodah are basically the things that happen in the field. But things that happen in the house for food preparation are just not called Melechet Avodah. And therefore, they're just not Usur. Right? It's as if there's only like 33 Melechot on Yom Tov. So on the one hand, you would say the Ramban is the most expansive. Because he's saying that like cooking is just, it's not that it's Hutra, it's not the Chuya, it's not a bad, it's not even like I had to trigger anything. Why? Yeah, exactly. It's just nothing. It's just not a Melechot on Yom Tov. That's true. But according to the Ramban, if I asked you, am I allowed to build if it's necessary for food on Yom Tov, you would say, probably not, because even if it's for food, that's...
You need to see which boxes it checks off.
Correct, and if it's, but it is clearly Melechet Avodah, and therefore it's Melechet Avodah for food, but it's still Usur, right? Correct, it's just, exactly, right? It's like the reason that these Melechot are what they are, right, in theory, philosophically is important, but like, correct, however... No, that's not what he says. No, and it's clear that that's not true. So if you look at the Iran, for example, the Iran says no. It's just a certain stage. It's from Lashon on. Earlier things, even though they're theoretically for food, they're just not us. They're just not mutter, right? It's not anything that you could possibly construe as for food. No, these malachot. No. Yes. Yes, that's what he says. No, that's not what he says. That's exactly the problem with the Ramban. Not the problem with the Ramban. That's the reality. No. not in the Ramban. I'm saying within the Ramban. Right? Now, so for example, the most radical view, though, who says, seems not to say Lo Nemra, but a very radical Hutra, is Tosfot. Tosfot has this crazy position, Shabbat Tzadikei. Again, like I said, I don't want to spend forever on a whole nefesh. That's why I gave you an article to sort of get you in the place where we'll understand it. Tosfot has this crazy position in Shabbat Tzadikei. The Gemara says that what malacha do you violate when you make cheese? Megabe. So the Gemara says, Bona. Bona. Making cheese is asur on Shabbat because of Bona. Because you're building. You're building the cheese. Okay?
Is cheese therefore a material that you want to use to construct a sukkah?
What?
Shell of that and then
everything can be used for a wall. Anything can be made for a sukkah wall. Right? So he says Bona. Now Tosfot says, now I understand that you're looking at me really like making that is making cheese is Bona. Yes. The Gemara says making cheese. What? Because it curdles. It becomes hard like that. Very good. Tosfot on that Gemara says, aha! That means that on Yom Tov, Bona must only be Derabanan. So building your house on Yom Tov is only Derabanan. It's obviously also be Derabanan, but like, because in theory I could construct a case in which Bona is for food purposes, anytime I build, it can only be us or me derabanan. What? It's not, but like, the melacha in general is like for food purposes. Yep. So Tosfot, see, I don't know if Tosfot is a lo nemra, like the Ramban just very radical, sort of the way Kobe's thinking about it, or it's, no, it's hutra. It's like, look, the malacha, as soon as the malacha can be justified for food, it just triggers the ochel nefesh mechanism. And that, correct. And therefore, it's like, I don't know. I want to tie a bow on my cake. I don't know, right? You have to kind of figure this out. I don't know. Now, why is, so, but these are the three basic ways of thinking about ochel nefesh. Okay, right? This is a little bit crazy. Fine. What's the problem? So now the problem is as follows. We now move to the next principle, which is the topic of our Gemara, which is mitoch. Right? The Gemara then has a machloka that we read briefly last time, the Gemara in Beit Sadaf Yud Bet, which is, do we hold that once a malacha is mutter? Yes? That once a malacha is mutter, it's mutter even for non-food related categories. So Beit Hillel says, yes, we hold that mitoch shehutra letzorech, hutra nami shelo letzorech, that once it's permitted for a food need, it is permitted in general. And Beit Shammai says, no. Now, if you wanted to oversimplify it, right, you would say, what is the machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? That Beit Shammai holds dichuya, that really ochel nefesh is aser, the malacha of ochel nefesh are aser, you need to trigger the heter. Yeah. And therefore, if I'm doing the malacha for the purpose of food preparation, then
it's okay.
It's good.
Right? Then it's good. Right? Then it's fine. But if I'm doing it not for food preparation, then the heter is not triggered. Right? The heter is not triggered. And therefore, it's not triggered, so it's aser. Right? And Beit Hillel, who says no, it's mutter whether or not you need it for food, would hold either hutra or the Ramban's lo nemra. Right? Definitely the Ramban, you would say, look, it doesn't matter. Right? The Ramban's whole point is that certain malachot on Yom Tov are just mutter because they're malacha, but they're not malachat avodah. Correct. Correct. Right? Yes? Yeah. So that would be the very, if I wanted to like oversimplify it, I would say that the machloket, Beit Hillel Shammai, of whether we hold mitoch, would depend on this, right? If I wanted to oversimplify it, yes, right? Now, there are other ways of explaining, but you could definitely go, you could understand why someone would go in this direction, yes? There is a further machloket Rashi and Tosfot, however, okay? And this will bring us back to our Tosfot. Rashi and Tosfot, however, have a machloket. And that is, when we say that it's mutter shelo letzorech, does that mean, what does shelo letzorech mean? What does it mean the malacha is mutter not for a need? So either not needed for food, but still necessary, or Right, exactly. Right. The machloket Rashi and Tosfos is, what does it mean it's mutter shelo litzara? Right, so one possibility is it's mutter with no justification whatsoever. The other is to say, no. It's mutter. You need to justify it. You just don't need to literally justify it in light of food preparation. Right? Meaning, mitoch she hutra litzorech, hutra nami shelo litzorech, doesn't mean because it's mutter when it's needed, it's mutter when it's not necessary at all. It's that because it's mutter for food, it's mutter for other things that you need, but are not food. Now, if you take that read, which is Tosfos read, correct. Right? Now, if you think that that's the case, then what? What would you say according to Tosfos? According to that read, so you could say dechuya, right? You could say that it's an abeyance. It's just that we expand the heter v'chol nefesh slightly beyond actual food preparation, right? To some other needs that also happen to be strong enough to trigger the heter. Right? Yes? Okay. With this, I can go to Tosfos, but I just want to say one thing before I do that. Reb Lichtenstein used to ask, and I heard this several times from Mashir, why is it that there is such a difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov? Right? If I want to take a minute and think philosophically, why is there such a difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov? So one reason is what Mordechai said, which is Simchat Yom Tov, right? But he said, let's say you go like the Ramban, right? That Shabbat and Yom Tov are fundamentally different, right? So it seems like you need a bigger explanation than that, right? Simchat Yom Tov doesn't seem to be a strong enough explanation to explain why Shabbat and Yom Tov are so fundamentally different that one has malacha and one has malacha ochel nefesh. Right? What? Well, that's exactly his point, is to say that they're so fundamentally different assumes... Right, so Rav Lichtenstein, one second. He notes that there is another relevant distinction that we talked about a little bit on Thursday, and that is lechalik. Remember, we talked about how on Shabbat there's halacha of chiluk melachot. Right, remember that if you violate 10 melachot at once by accident, you bring 10 karbanot up. Ten different avot. Right, so if Kobe, I'm sorry, I'm. Who doesn't mind if I vilify that? Okay, Kobe is being vilified. So Kobe forgot it was Shabbat. And then, what? So he made a sandwich, but in order to make the sandwich, first he drove to the store, right? He drove to the field. He cut down the wheat, and he took the wheat, and then he ground it into flour, and then he took the flour, and he took it in the mill, right? And then he kneaded it, and then he made the bread, and then he was like, oh, I want cheese on it, so he took milk, and he made cheese, so he violated like 10 different malachot, right? So then we say, we're very sorry, I hope that was a really good cheese sandwich, because now you owe 10 cows to the Beit HaMikdash.
Would he be like broke after that?
Probably, he would know to never forget that it's Shabbat again, because it's not worth it. Your cheese sandwich was just not that good. No offense. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like Bertie used to the grilled cheese here.
It's like really bad bread.
You're right. Maybe it is worth it. Maybe it is worth 10. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe a choliot it's worth paying 10 cows. Let's see. How much is a cow? Let's see. Because the Gemara sometimes, just to make the point, says that you're chayav a chatat shmina, a nice fat cow. So how much is a cow? Does a fat cow cost? How much is a fat? No, this is like fat. Okay, instead I'm getting a thing called the fat cow plan. I don't know what that is. I don't know what this is. I don't think I should either. Fine. Okay, I'll try cattle. Let's see. Cattle. How much does cattle cost? Let's try that instead. Cattle cost. A cost of a cow will usually be somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000. So let's take the average. So it's like a $25,000 to $30,000 sandwich. Rabbi Wasserman is like, I wouldn't mind spending $30,000 on the sandwich. I mean, not because of the carbono, but like, it's probably a good sandwich if it actually costs $30,000. He's really like, I'm going to Dubai. They definitely have $30,000 sandwiches. Vadai somewhere, what? Oh, no. No, you got to buy the cows. I'm sorry. Mo, you'll help him track it down in Texas. The 10 caps. Yes, okay, good. So, so on Shabbat we have Chiluk Melachot. On Yom Tov we do not. There's no Chiluk Melachot on Yom Tov. So Rav Lichtenstein claimed as follows, and he said, look, the Ibn Ezra makes this point. On Shabbat, why is Melacha forbidden? The Torah says it's not a trick question. Yeah, philosophically. I'm talking philosophical for a minute. Why did they rest? Because Hashem rested, right? Hashem rested on Shabbat, and therefore every malacha that you do is what? Is a denial of the fact that God rested, right? That's the way it's conceptualized in the Torah, right? God rested and didn't do malacha, so you can't do malacha. And every time you do malacha, right? This is how it, this is not like a chiddush. This is what the Torah says, right? That it's you say this every week, right? OT, this is the sign between me and the Jewish people. Kish is it yamin? That in 6 days I created the world, right? It's very clear that every act, every creative act that you do, is somehow you expressing a denial in God's creation of the world. Yes? Yom Tov is not. Exactly, it's not. And therefore he argues that on Yom Tov, the reason Malacha is Asur is because you're supposed to create a certain atmosphere of the day, and Malacha, or Malacha Avodah at least, impinges on it. If we take Mordechai's point, it's on Yom Tov, you're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to rejoice with God. And if I'm spending my whole day working, then I'm not enjoying it. But that means that on Shabbat, every act that I do is itself significant and like a denial of the nature of the day, right? And the and what we're saying about God. Whereas on Yom Tov, the malachot together create a certain atmosphere, but each one doesn't have an independent identity. Exactly. And he says, so in that from that aspect, he says, look, on Shabbat, just because I need something to make me happy doesn't make it less creative. Right? On Shabbat, the problem is you can't be creative because then you're denying that God created and stopped creating on this day. But on Yom Tov, which is not commemorating the fact that God created the world, it's trying to, the lack of malacha is trying to create a certain atmosphere. So if the performance of certain malachot would contribute rather than detract from that atmosphere, so then they're mutter. And he argues that that's what's going on with the whole nefesh, is we're saying, look, if I'm doing this so that I can have a nice Yom Tov meal and enjoy my Yom Tov, which is a mitzvah, as we already talked about, so then I'm contributing to the spirit of the day, not detracting. But that's only true on Yom Tov. On Shabbat, it's not that I'm working as much as I'm creating. I'm doing malacha. I'm doing the opposite of what God did on Shabbat. Yes? No. It's objective, correct. 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 There is no subjective aspect. Definitely on Shabbat. Correct. On Yom Tov, it's going to be more complicated. Exactly. And Yom Tov, it is more complicated. Right, not necessarily personally subjective, but yes, it is more societally. The Gemara is very clear that it is society dependent. Certain things, right, that we define certain things as l'tzorech based on whether it's davar shaval chol nefesh, is the type of thing that most people would want. And if it's something that you happen to enjoy, but most people don't care for, don't need, the Gemara says it's aser because the standard is shaval chol nefesh. Is yes. What? Yes. But you could also explain it within the Raman's model, that the reason Shabbat and Yom Tov are patterned differently, right, are fundamentally patterned differently, is because they're getting across different messages. Yeah. But you, oh, yeah, yeah, no, no, right. Within the Chuyah, it would be harder to say this, because, yes, you're saying basically Shabbat and Yom Tov are the same thing, except that in Shabbat, you're not allowed to do things that make you happy, and Yom Tov you are. Yes. It would be harder. Okay. So now we return to our sugya, okay, with that half-hour introduction to Ochel Nefesh, and that is about what I'm going to do, right, because as you can tell from this brief thing, this could go on forever, right? You probably realize this could go on forever. No, maybe, but this is not one of them. So Tosfot says in just two lines, he equates the Gemara's conclusion of Lo Amin and Hoel V'Hutra Avar L'Tzorech Hutranam Ish Lo L'Tzorech to the principle I just told you of Mitoch. Right, the two-line one. Lo Amin Mitoch. Yes? Di amrinan mitoch shari. Because if you hold mitoch is permitted, afal gav to be inan sorach hayom tzat, hocham ashem mavir, hevei sorach. So Tosfot says, first of all, he equates this with mitoch. Now, what's the problem with equating it with mitoch? What's the problem with equating Rabbi Kiva's statement with the rule of mitoch? As I said, who holds mitoch? Beit Hillel. Who holds not mitoch? Beit Shammai. Tosfot doesn't raise this as a problem. Tosfot simply lines up with Rabbi Kiva with Beit Shammai. That this sugya is holding, that Rabbi Kiva just denies mitoch. Mitoch is the principle that because something is permitted for food purposes, it's permitted for non-food purposes. Right? Now, the Gemara doesn't call it mitoch, it calls it hoel. Right? Now, admittedly, hoel and mitoch both mean since, but still, he doesn't equate it with the rule of mitoch. Sorry, he equates it with the rule of mitoch. And therefore, he just says, so one second, therefore he says, according to Beit Shammai, according to Beit Kiva, he must be lined up with Beit Shammai, which is, we just don't say mitoch. So the reason that you're not allowed to burn chametz on Yom Tov, according to Rabbi Kiva, is because he denies the principle of mitoch. Now, this is a problem because he just lined him up with Beit Shammai. That's a problem. Yes? Problem? Definitely a problem. He lined him up with Beit Shammai. So now you'll tell me. Now, what's the problem? So remember I told you there's a machloket Rashi and Tosfot about the rules of mitoch. What is the machloket Rashi Tosfot about the rules of mitoch? Whether mitoch shelo letzorech means for no purpose at all, or it has to be a purpose but not necessarily a food purpose, right? So remember, Rashi holds that mitoch shehotcher letzorech hotchernami shelo letzorech means that it becomes mutter entirely without any need. Tosfot holds
it still needs a purpose.
A purpose, right? A purpose. So now, if you knew that machloket in a vacuum, so how could you, in this sugya, defend Rabbi Kiva as not holding like Beit Shammai? But in a vacuum. If I just asked you, okay, I don't want to line... Tosfot is no problem lining up Rabbi Kiva with Beit Shammai, yes? They're just saying, if he holds that you're not allowed to burn the chametz on Pesach, that's because... On Yom Tov, that's because we don't say mitoch. So Tosfot just says, aha, he doesn't hold the mitoch. He holds it needs a food requirement. Now, in a vacuum, what might you have said? That he doesn't hold like Beit Shammai. You would say, in this case, mitoch. Why would you say, in this case, mitoch? Very good. Right, you would say, it's not saying that Rabbi Kiva lines up with Beit Shammai versus Beit Hillel, because why would you line up Rabbi Kiva with Beit Shammai? We don't pass on Beit Shammai. But you would say, but wait a second, I know that there's a machloket Rashi Tosfot, that Rashi says that when we allow you to do malacha, you need no justification whatsoever. Tosfot says you need a justification. Yes? You need a justification. And therefore, what might you have said if you wanted to defend Rabbi Kiva and say Rabbi Kiva is not like Beit Shammai? Then what does it mean when it says mitoch? Not that he doesn't hold of mitoch in general, but he doesn't hold of mitoch here. Because what would you say? Maybe what the Gemara is entertaining is exactly the machloket Rashi and Tosfot, which is when we say that we expand ochel nevesh beyond food circumstances, do we require it to be somewhat necessary, or do we just say? Once it's mutter, it's mutter. And you could say that what the Gemara is saying by saying we don't say mitoch is we require you to have a justification of some sort. What? And what might you have said? So maybe burning chametz is not a justification at all because even though it's a mitzvah, it's like not for you at all, right? Because it's not, right? What? We could, and that's what Tosfot assumes. Right? But let's say you didn't want to do it because people don't like doing that. Why would Rabbi Kiva embrace Beit Shammai? Because we don't pass on Beit Shammai. People don't usually embrace Beit Shammai. Now, what's the problem? Does Tosfot accept what I just said as a defense to make Rabbi Akiva work with? No, he does not. Why does he not accept it? Because he says this is Tzarechsa. What are you talking about? Right? He says. Right? That's why I want to show you this two line of Tosfot is packing in so much conceptual background. You just have to know what it is. Right? Tosfot says, Diyam yin mitoch shari, if you held a mitoch, aval gav dim inan tzarech hayom ksad, even though he thinks you need tzarech. Hocham mashem avaver, have a tzarech. He said, how can you tell me that burning chametz on Pesach is not a need at all? How could you say that? It's impossible. Why is that impossible? Because it's a mitzvah. You have to destroy the chametz on Pesach. How could you tell me it's not tzarech? Right? And therefore, Tosfot doesn't buy this. The reason that Tosfot just goes like Afi and just says, oh, please, just line up Rabbi Akiva Beit Shammai. Please don't do any intellectual gymnastics and tell me, no, he's holding Mekpit Hillel. And when we say he doesn't hold a mitoch, it means he does hold a mitoch, but he holds a mitoch, but you need some justification. The reason he doesn't buy that analysis is because he says there is a justification. If you held a mitoch, even to the higher standard of Tosfot, which is that in order for something to be mutter, it needs to be that you're doing it for some justifiable purpose on Yom Tov. Tosfot says, and what exactly would make this not justifiable? You're destroying the chametz on Pesach because it's a mitzvah, because it's chametz, and it's Pesach. You know, we've been talking about this since the beginning of the year. We don't like chametz on Pesach. It's the Yetzer Hara. Right? It's terrible. I don't know. The point is that you have to get rid of it. You're not allowed to own chametz. Bal yirah, bal yimatzi, tashbitu, you know? All those psukim. There's a very good reason. If I asked you, how dare you? Why is it necessary for you to destroy the chametz on Pesach, Mordechai? What are you doing? Or Avi, why are you finally burning those stale Oreos? And you'll say, whoa, Rabbi, it's Pesach. My stale Oreos are not just the stale Oreos. They're the Yetzer Hara incarnate. Of course I'm destroying them. Right? What else would you want me to do with them? Right? And Mordechai will say, whoa, that's too philosophical. I'm destroying it because of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzei Tashbitu. I don't know what you're talking about, Yetzer Hara. You'd both be right. But the point is that it is necessary. There is a justification, right? It's very easy to explain why you're getting rid of chametz on Pesach, because it's chametz on Pesach. I don't know how much I need to explain myself, right? What exactly are we doing here learning Pesachim if you haven't gotten into your mind that chametz on Pesach, no, right? This is not like very complicated. I know that many of the things that we learn here are complicated, and sometimes you might get lost. I hope you haven't got lost on this very basic principle that on Pesach, we don't do chametz, right? This much, I think you should walk away from the year. Pesach, no, Esha. Pesach, no chametz. Why you pull these low blows? I don't understand. It's ridiculous. What? Does Ephraim not believe in chametz? Yes, he does. Yalla. Okay. So that's, but Tosfot isn't willing to buy this because Tosfot said, of course there's a need. Right? Of course there's a need. What are you talking about? Of course there's a need on Pesach to get rid of chametz. It's what we call, yeah, it's what we call Pesach, Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzei Tashbitu, Bir Chametz, blah, 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 blah. Right? Now, within Tosfot, like Tosfot's general shita, yes, that mitoch is only mutter if there's some sort of need, okay, you should know that there's a machloket within that. Some Rishonim understand Tosfot as meaning that the need that you need, which is not food related, is personal benefit. Okay? Some Rishonim say that the justification is mitzvah. That a need for a mitzvah is another justification, in addition to food, for doing these malachot. Now, obviously, if you think it's a mitzvah, who seems to hold that? This Tosfot. Right? Because this Tosfot is telling me, even if you have the limited view of mitoch, right, that mitoch is only mutter when there's some sort of need, and this is a need, if you think that the type of need that allows you to expand ochel nefesh is a mitzvah, then it's obvious, very obvious, why you can't tell me that destroying chametz doesn't count as mitoch. Right? It's a mitzvah. If, however,
you went in the direction of saying that what? That Tosfot requires not a mitzvah need, but a need for you, hana'ah for you. So then you might say, no. Why is it, and why would you say that? What's the logic? Again, I know I'm doing this outside, but this is in lieu of me giving 20 shiurim on ochel nefesh, right? So I'm just going to play with your head here. But what would the logic be for saying that a mitzvah is not the best justification in the world, that a better justification is your need? And what is you, right? Is what could Tosfos be saying when he says you need it to be tzorech for you, just not food? He could be saying, look, the key to mitoch is that when we say food, we don't mean food. We mean like more expansively. Like it's just it's a local expansion of the idea of what it means to do something for food. Meaning you thought that food meant food.
So he's expanded
based on. No, Behillel. Remember, according to him, mitoch requires some need. That Beit Hillel is expanding what it means to need something for food. It doesn't need food. It means human need, right? And therefore, if that's the case, then you could look at our sugya and say mitzvah isn't a human need, and that's why the Gemara is saying, even within the context of Beit Hillel, and even in the context of Beit Hillel, that if you think that we hold of mitoch, that we do expand ochel nefesh, but the way that we expand ochel nefesh is simply by a very localized expansion, that we say that when we say you can do things for your need, we don't mean just food, but we mean even your other needs. Then you could look at this and say, for a mitzvah, that's God's need. That's not, right? It's not.
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
What?
It's God's needs, not a human need.
Right, it's God's needs and not a human need.
I was confused. I thought they were still talking about.
Right, and so now you'll tell me, right? Wait a second. Right, you'll tell me I don't understand. Right. Now, who says what I just said? Who just says that the key to our sugya? I didn't give it to you, but who says the key to our sugya is that we required tzorech hayom k'tzat, and the tzorech hayom cannot be one of mitzvah. It has to be something that you need. So that is the Maram Chalava on Vav Amud Aleph, right, where I'll just read you the Maram Chalava. He says, mistabrali, you know what Rabbi Kiva means? Dehide Rabbi Kiva lo pliga didan. Rabbi Kiva isn't arguing with mitoch. Deheich efshar deshavik beit hil vavet kibet shamai. Do you really think that he would give up on Beit Hillel and Paskin like Beit Shammai? Now Avi says, why not? The Maram Chalava is not willing to say that. He's saying, Elahachi kamar Rafa. Shma mina de Beit Hillel lo amri mitoch. He holds of mitoch, but he only holds of mitoch when? Ela bedavar sheishbo tzorech hayom. Right? That only when something is needed for the day. And it's clear that according to him, what is tzorech hayom? Right, so he says it's not mitzvah like those shita, like Tosfot, like Rav Yah and others, right? But rather
something
you need, right? Now, what's the problem? So the problem is, does that make sense to any of you that you would only be allowed to do things for you, but not for a mitzvah? What? No, it's very hard. Now. Good, so Kobe says it does make sense. The problem is that the Gemara gives another example of mitoch, which is you're allowed to carry a lulav. That's the Mishnah's example, which tells you that what?
That
it's also
for you, also
includes mitzvah. Or mitzvah should be another heter, right? So this is where things get tricky. Right, this is where things get tricky, because on the one hand, there's the Mishnah that I just mentioned to you that says you're allowed to carry a lulav on Pesach, on Yom Tov, which implies that clearly for the sake of mitzvah, mitoch will be triggered. However, there are other times in halacha where the opposite is true. The opposite is true. So the halacha is that on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook for a Jew. Are you allowed to cook for a non-Jew? No. The Gemara says, lochem velo la'akol. And then, as we'll see, it's a machloket also, lochem velo la'gavala. You and not for God. So let's stick for a moment with lo la'akol. Why are you not allowed to cook for a non-Jew on Yom Tov?
Because
so if you think if it's dechuya, explain to me conceptually how this works. Dechuya. Outside, if I just say... Very good, right? If I hold the chuya and I say fundamentally all the malachot aras are on Yom Tov, it's just that if I trigger the right heter there because, let's say, Simchat Yom Tov,
yeah.
So then I'm allowed to do it. So then you would just say, well, a non-Jew is not chayv in Simchat Yom Tov, and therefore the heter isn't triggered. Yes? What if you hold like the Ramban? No, on Yom Tov, it's just cooking is not a malacha at all. So why can't I cook for a non-Jew? It's just not a malacha. What? So you would have to say it's either it's derabanan or it's deraita, but it's not, right, that certain times something is so egregiously against the point of the heter that it creates a new iser, right? Like you'd have to be machadesh a new iser. Yes, yes, 100%. That he does believe in the heter, but when you're doing it for the non-Jew who's so far removed, like there's a special pasuk when it says lochem, that you do this for you, lachem lo la'akum, we read it, you and not for the non-Jew. What that's telling you is like we create a new Israel. Now, this is, by the way, a very important halacha, right? So there's a very important derabanan derivative of this that people don't realize, which is very, very complicated, right? So the Gemara says one derivative of this sugya is that on Shabbat, you're allowed to invite non-Jews to your Shabbos meal.
Right.
Why are you allowed to invite non-Jews to your Shabbos meal? Because you're not allowed to cook anyways. So all the cooking you did was before Shabbat, so whatever he's eating was already cooked. But on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do this. Why? Because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook for Jews. You're not allowed to cook for non-Jews. So if you invite a non-Jew to your meal, what are you going to end up doing? You're potentially going to end up cooking for him. And that would be usher. And therefore, there's an Isser Derabanan to invite non-Jews to a Yom Tov meal. Zera, Shabbat, but on Shabbat, you can.
Implied it, sir, that you can't do it for a non-Jew.
Not implied, it's explicit, it's a puzzle.
Okay,
lachem, v'lo lach.
It doesn't make a difference on Shabbat.
Right. Correct, because on Shabbat it's just us. But amazingly, and this may be where we have to look for another way of doing this, is that the other drasha that the Gemara says is not just lachem velo la'akum, but lachem velo ligavala. Not for God. Right? Now, we already said that certain mitzvot are clearly mutter. Right? But on the other hand, the Gemara goes out of its way to say that you aren't allowed to do things for God. Yes, for God. Ligavala. For... Right?
So, wait, you're supposed to bring
karbanos. The manifestation of this is karbano. So the other possible direction to understand this is to say, maybe I'm allowed to do it for mitzvot, but there's a certain type of mitzvot that I can't. And there's two ways of taking that. One is to say that certain mitzvot are insufficient, right? Meaning, maybe a mitzvah allows you to do ochel nefesh. A mitzvah triggers the heter of mitoch, but certain mitzvot aren't strong enough. Or, you'll say what? That just like by a non-Jew, sometimes doing it for another purpose makes it worse. Sometimes doing it for God isn't just not strong enough, but it creates an independent iser. Right? It creates an independent reason not to do it. So, I think we'll need one more day on this. The Ritva, I didn't give you, but the Ritva says that the reason that everyone is going to agree that you're not allowed to destroy chametz on, burn chametz on Pesach is because even though he thinks mitoch allows you to do mitzvot, certain mitzvot are not sufficient. Now, you'll tell me, how could it be? Why is this mitzvah not sufficient? How could you tell me that destroying chametz on Pesach is not a sufficient reason? If mitzvah is a good enough reason to violate malacha on Yom Tov, so how could burning chametz on Pesach not be a good enough reason? How could that be? Because so you could, right? So the Ritva is a much simpler answer. And the Ritva says, you were supposed to, right? He says the only type of mitzvah that can trigger the heter of mitoch is a mitzvah that should have been done today. So if today is Sukkot, and I need to carry my lulav, so then that's today's mitzvah, and that's why it triggers mitoch. But everyone agrees that when should you have destroyed chametz?
Before Pesach.
When should you have destroyed it?
Before Pesach.
Before Pesach. And therefore, even if you're stuck with it on Pesach, is this the ideal form of the mitzvah? No. And therefore, the Ritva says, Kevan shi mitzvah shizmana b'yom tov chashiv l'mishrei mitoch. He says, if it's a mitzvah that the time to perform the mitzvah is Yom Tov, then it can trigger mitoch. To have a kelulav latzei bo, it's like taking out your lulav on Sukkot. Kosevet our liquor bo. Umiyuhashta the kaimam on the beer buyudalid. But since we think that the main time you're supposed to draw chametz is on the 14th, hecha da avar velo bitel. If you were derelict and you didn't destroy it before, ain l'sarfer b'yom tov. You can't burn it on Yom Tov. Kevan digiz mana mitzvah kodem. Because the real time of the mitzvah was before Pesach. Veve kemila shlo bizmana shino docha Yom Tov. He says, I'll give you another example. Mila. Is Mila docha Shabbat?
Yes.
Is Mila docha, right? When? On the eighth day. So I understand. If it's not Mila bizmana, it's the ninth day. Okay? Are you allowed to do the Mila on Shabbat? Obviously not.
Right.
But the Ritva says, but okay. Shabbat, I'm willing to buy that you're not allowed to do it. Why? Because on Shabbat,
you can't draw blood,
and there's no like heter of ohol nefesh. The only way you're going to be allowed to bring have a brit meal on Shabbat is if I have a special gzeir nakatuv that tells me you're allowed to do this on Shabbat. So if it's not bizman, you can't do it. But the Ritva says, well, what about Yom Tov? Why don't you just say, well, on Yom Tov, if something's for a mitzvah, I'm allowed to do it because of mitoch. So why am I not allowed to, I understand Shabbat without a special Zerat HaKatuv. I couldn't do a Brit Mila on Shabbat. But on Yom Tov, why can't I do a Brit Mila on Yom Tov? Even if it's not the right day, it's a mitzvah? Yes. So why is it worse? Why is it worse than me carrying out my lulav? So today's not the right day, but it's a mitzvah. What is the Ritva's answer? You should have done it earlier. It's a mitzvah shelo bizmana. That even if you hold that mitoch can be triggered by a mitzvah, it has to be a mitzvah that is somehow inherent to today. Right? It's inherent to today. If it's not inherent to today, right? So then it doesn't trigger the heter. And therefore the Ritva is telling you that it's not triggered. Right? It's because it's not a sufficient mitzvah. Right? Now, you could read the Ritva in two ways. One is that there is no mitzvah to destroy it on Pesach, right? That on Pesach it's just negating Bal Yer Bal Yematzeh, and the mitzvah of Tashbitu is only an Erev Yom Tov. Or you could say it's a mitzvah, it's just not the ideal form of the mitzvah, and you need the ideal form of the mitzvah to trigger the heter. Right? Whatever you want. But now what we have is, so just to review, okay? And then we'll spend one more day on this. But to review, okay? So again, I know we did a lot, but let me review. We said, there's a heter called Ochel Nefesh. There are three ways of understanding it. One is, Dichuya, that it fundamentally exists, but it's held in abeyance. The second is that, once you trigger the heter, it becomes Mutzer. The third is that it was never said at all. We said one implication is, might be the Machloket Beit Hillel Beit Shammai of Mitoch. Where according to Beit Hillel, even if something is not needed for food, it triggers a heter. Beit Shammai disagrees. Right? But then we noted there's a further machloket Rashi Tosfot. When we say that you're allowed to do things not for food, do you need a need at all? Yes? Rashi says you need no need whatsoever. Tosfot says you need a need. Now, what is that need? So some Rishonim say you need a mitzvah need, and some say you need it to be for you. Now you bring it back to our sugya, and you say, why is it, according to Rabbi Akiva, you can't destroy chametz on Yom Tov? So you would say, you should be allowed to. So the first possibility is that Rabbi Akiva simply lines up with Beit Shammai, that we don't expand the malacha you're allowed to do on Yom Tov to anything beyond food preparation. Correct? And that is how Tosfot understands him. So the problem is, well, what if I hold like Rashi? So according to Rashi, should you be allowed to destroy it? Yes. But according to Tosfot, that you need a need, so should you be allowed to destroy it? So then you have to ask, well, what type of need is sufficient? If you think that it's a mitzvah need, so then at first glance you would say, it should be allowed. On the other hand, if you think that what you need is a need for you, you would say, maybe this is a need for you. The problem is that we know in the Gemara that many things that are mitzvot, are you allowed to do them, like carrying your lulav?
Yes.
Yes. So how could it be that here you're not allowed to? So here the Gemara, right? So here what you get is that you have the Maram Chalava and you have the Ritva. The Maram Chalava says the key to our sugya is that in fact we don't focus on the mitzvah. Right? In order to make something mutter, even in our expansive needs of Ochel Nefesh, what we need is that it's needed for you. But if it's not needed for you, it's usur. But if you note, but wait a second, we do allow things for a mitzvah, so then what do you have to do with machadesh? The only type of mitzvah that triggers the heter is a mitzvah that's supposed to be done today. But either because there's no mitzvah destroyed on Pesach, the mitzvah is only in Yudalid, or the primary mitzvah is before. However you want to take it, the point is that the mitzvah is not fundamentally today, and therefore this particular mitzvah of destroying chametz not at the right time is insufficient to trigger the heter of mitoch, and therefore this is not according to Beit Shammai, it's according to Beit Hillel. But it's according to Beit Hillel within the framework that mitoch requires at least some need, including a mitzvah need, but it's a very particular mitzvah need. Okay? The last possibility, and this is what we'll finish up with on the sources here, is that maybe you have to take a different track, and not that it's insufficient, but that it's particularly problematic to destroy chametz on Pesach, and this will be based on, just like by non-Jews, we say that lochem v'lo la'akum, right? That you can't do it for non-Jews. The Gemara says also lochem v'lo la'gavoa, and then Mordechai will tell me, but wait a second, aren't you allowed to bring certain karbanot? So that's exactly the Gemaras I gave you. But the Gemaras I gave you are about destroying, right, are about bringing karbanot. And what you're going to see there is that in the context of karbanot, karbanot are particularly problematic. And the question is why? Does that create another explanation?
And also, would it depend on which karbanot?
And yes, that's what you're going to see. I gave you the very, very basics of this. And the other thing I gave you is that parallel to the question of karbanot is the Gemara and Shabbat that we mentioned briefly last week, but I gave it to you inside now, which is just like there might be a particular problem of destroying karbanot, there's a particular problem of burning kudshim on Yom Tov, right? So there are certain types of mitzvot that it's not that they're not sufficient, but that just like by the non-Jew, the very fact that I choose to do this for the non-Jew is, right, creates its own set of halachic problems. There are certain type of mitzvot that when I perform them on Yom Tov, despite the fact they're a mitzvah, they create their unique set of halachic problems. And so what I gave you is the Gemara and Beit Zot that introduce these problems in the context of Karban, and the Gemara and Shabbat that introduces this concept in the category of the destruction of Truma oil and things that are Kodesh. And those two historians might create the final path to explain why, even if we held like Beit Hillel, that you are allowed to do things for the purpose of a mitzvah, why the destruction of chametz might be uniquely problematic. Not just not sufficient, but uniquely problematic. And that's the rest of the sources that are on this page. And now you see why this is all packed into a two-line Tosfot, right? And the top, but to understand this, right, this is the background that you needed. That's why I gave you an English article to make it a little bit easier. And here I gave you basically everything is translated the Gemara except for the truth of the Avni Miluim and the Tosfot at the end. So try to carve out that conceptual possibility, right, to understand that certain mitzvot is not just that they're not sufficient like the Ritva would have it, but they are
also
right. They're actively problematic. And see how the burning of chametz might be one of those categories that is particularly problematic. Okay.